What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
Leonard Peltier is coming home, member of the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa and the longest-serving Native political prisoner in the United States history. Joining us to discuss are Summer Aubrey, an attorney with the Water Protector Legal Collective, as well as International Indian Treaty Council, who has worked on international legal advocacy for Leonard's freedom, and Natalie Segovia is the executive director of the Water Protector Legal Collective, who has worked together with Summer on the international legal case for Leonard's freedom. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Kat.
Thank you so much for joining us. I want to set a little context, right? I don't want to assume that everybody knows what happened to Leonard and why there's an international movement that is celebrating him coming home right now. So I'm just wondering if you can, let's start, I guess, with Summer. Talk about June 26, 1975, but also the conditions on Pine Ridge when all this took place. What do we need to understand about the political context?
So what we really need to understand, and for folks that haven't been following the American Indian movement or the fight for Mr. Peltier's freedom, is that this was a rife time, not only in Indian country, but, you know, the United States is at the height of the civil rights movement. And AIM was no different, and that's the American Indian movement, right? And so what happened on Pine Ridge, there was corruption ongoing, and so individuals were called in from AIM to help solidify and protect folks that were being targeted by goon squads. And 60 individuals, indigenous individuals, were killed during that time. And so it was really a difficult time for indigenous people trying to preserve their culture in particular and practice their religion, which was illegal at the time, and was just coming to just a couple of years later would finally be legalized in order to practice, right? So that was the occupation at Pine Ridge there, and of course Mr. Peltier was there, and that led to insurgency from the government. FBI authorities were there, and what this time period has been called is the Reign of Terror. And those of us that are in Indian country who study the law, who study the movement, and are grassroots folks, you know, that time is not far from our minds. And I think that there's fear around things, you know, currently with the current administration, you know, about things getting bad again. But Mr. Peltier was there. Unfortunately, there were shootouts and things like that, and there were two FBI agents killed that day, along with other indigenous individuals. Of course, everyone leaves those out. Those deaths that were indigenous individuals were never tried and never investigated. However, the two FBI agents that were killed were not only the FBI, but other authorities worked really, really hard to ensure that those deaths were prosecuted. And Mr. Peltier was one of those individuals that was prosecuted for those deaths. And during his trial, it was rife with prosecutorial misconduct. There was a lot of evidence that wasn't allowed to be heard. Even the prosecutor at the time has now come out and said that they would not have been able to try that same case today because of how rife the trial was with misconduct. There were also racist jury members. It was well known to not only the judge, but to the lawyers involved, that those jury members not only were racist, but had great prejudice against particularly Indigenous individuals and Indigenous nations. So it's been a really long fight to gain Mr. Peltier's freedom. Countless individuals have done that work because it was a sham trial. And so, there is no evidence tying him to the deaths of those two FBI agents.
Thank you. Going back to Summer's comment about being concerned about things getting bad again under the new administration, and I'm going to throw this to you, Natalie, one of the talking points that I've heard from political pundits and some government officials say that the pardon by Biden will, quote, go a long way in healing the relationship with Indigenous peoples. Will it?
Well, as Summer, just Kat, you started with a really difficult question. I'll just say for Summer's sake too, you kind of asked her to summarize over 50 years of movement. In a couple minutes, what's really difficult. So in respect to the question you're asking now, I would have to say that this was a call, and Leonard's freedom now is the result of a call that's been made consistently by Indigenous peoples across Turtle Island and internationally for the past 50 years. So even though Water Protector Legal Collective is a legal organization and we've worked as Leonard's attorneys in the international sphere, and he's had attorneys over the past 5 decades, this is truly, truly a win for the movement. It is a win for the people. It is a win for tribal leaders and nations that have been advocating heavily for his release. And in the past months leading up to the end of President Biden's term, there was a strong push by tribal leaders in particular. There was a letter from over 120 former and current tribal leaders, as well as grassroots organizations, including NDN Collective, the National Congress of American Indians, Red Nation, Native Organizers Alliance, and the National Boarding School Healing Coalition. These organizations and these tribal leaders engaged in really powerful advocacy. And I think it's important to name and center and honor the fact that this moment is a testament to that power of collective action, to unwavering solidarity and relentless advocacy, and really a testament to the power of the people. So when we talk about healing a wound, this has been named as a wound by Indian country, an open wound on Indian country for many, many decades. As far as repairing a relationship between the federal government and the tribes, kind of difficult when this is the last thing that's done in the last hour of Biden's presidency. Uh-huh. And then we have an hour later a different president who is hell-bent and intent on, wearing down all of the different protections that have been put in place by Indigenous peoples in the last 4 years, including Secretary Deb Haaland, who as Secretary of the Interior sought to protect many national monuments, many sacred sites, many places of importance for Indigenous peoples across Turtle Island or the United States. And we're seeing those rollbacks. Even things as symbolic, I know you, on the previous person that was on your show today, was talking about the executive orders, but one executive order was the renaming of Mount Denali. Yes. As Mount McKinley, right? And that's symbolic. And we're talking about McKinley, President McKinley, who, by the way, is hated in Hawaii because by Native Hawaiians, because even though President Grover Cleveland had said he would honor the Hawaiian monarchy and restore the Hawaiian monarchy, the immediate president after him, right, McKinley, identified as an American imperialist. And so this is a new and fresh wound, right, to rename something that had already been restored to the Indigenous name. I think we will see more of that in the next 4 years. I'm hoping it's only 4 years, frankly, but we have to see a massive sea change in the U.S. And I think part of that is going to be the continuation of us seeking community and us as part of a grassroots movement, really keeping each other safe.
Yeah, and first I want to say, Summer, you did an amazing job with that summation. I know on radio we just have a few minutes, and I think it was important to start with that context. And second, Natalie, that was sort of the slant of the question, right? If you look at all of the horrific things the federal government has done to Indigenous nations and peoples, to say that this is a victory for the people is not like they did of their own volition, and that's going to erase everything else and what's sure to come felt flippant to me. Summer, what are the conditions of his pardon? He didn't get the not guilty admission from the government. What are the parameters?
So what has effectively happened is that his sentence has been commutated, and so even though on the declaration it states that, you know, he's granted clemency and things like that, this is far from what we think of when we think of clemency or a pardon. So he's still being treated as though he is guilty of these, guilty for the deaths of these two FBI agents. He is going to be under house arrest. However, this is going to enable him to be free from federal imprisonment, which is the conditions where he's at in Pullman 1 in Florida, not only violates BOP policy that he's supposed to be within 500 miles of his homeland, but the conditions there are horrible, and his health has been deteriorating. So the fact that he can come home, even though it's not the full clemency or pardon that we wanted for him and what he deserved, quite frankly, he's going to be able to come home to his lands, his family, and be able to engage in ceremony and be on the land. And February 18th, he'll be able, is the effective release date.
Right on. And to be clear, we've got to, you know, in our social justice movement, celebrate the wins. And yes, this was a massive win. I tell you, we had our King Day march here in Oakland on Monday, and the crowd was wild about him coming home. Natalie, last question for you. What is the call to community now?
As Summer just said, the effective date for Biden's order was February 18th, really. So in the meantime, I think the call to community is for us to stay vigilant. Usually in the time before the release of a political prisoner of the status and stature of Leonard Peltier, who was the longest serving political prisoner in the United States, it's important to continue to just stay vigilant, you know, and see if there are any other further calls to action from the legal teams, and then also from the grassroots organizations like Endian Collective and others that are mobilizing now for his return home. I think generally speaking, though, on a broader level, it's important for us to kind of remain cool-headed. It's a difficult time ahead. We know that we have monumental challenges ahead. I think we all saw this coming. But we've been through many things in the past before, right? So we have to really pull together. And I think there is that power in community and power in the collective, and that will see us through the night.
All right, I've got to leave it there. Thank you both for coming on the show this morning. We've been speaking to Summer Aubrey, an attorney with the Water Protector Legal Collective, as well as Natalie Segovia, the executive director of the Water Protector Legal Collective. They've both worked on the international legal case for Leonard Peltier's freedom.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.